So, Infone, what would you say was the one thing that you learned, or the biggest gift you got from recovering from breast cancer?
The biggest gift I got was to learn how to slow down. So slow down, and in slowing down, you get to appreciate and enjoy every single thing that you've been blessed with. Because when you're driving by in the fast lane, quite frankly, you might see that there's flowers, but you don't know the flowers are pink and green and blue. You don't see all of that stuff. And so you learn to slow down. And you then, by doing that, you get to really enjoy and appreciate the blessings that have been put in your life.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yes.
Hey, beautiful. This is Aminata Soul Plant Walker Firewoman, and I am the host of the Mother Tree Network, where spirituality and earth wisdom meet racial justice and women's leadership. Hey, gorgeous, it's Aminata, and I am so excited to share with you this episode with Infone Etukudin. Infone is a Nigerian-American. She's a tax attorney. She's an entrepreneur. She's a, you know, highly successful and driven Black woman, and she is a survivor of breast cancer. And in this conversation, we hit everything. We began with Infone telling us three questions that we should ask our tax person, you know, your accountant or whoever it is you're doing your taxes with. And these are really juicy and important questions if you want to keep more of your money and also stay legal with your taxes. Infone tells us that, you know, we need to make sure that, especially as women, as Black people, that we pay our share, but not more than our share. So she's going to give you three questions that you need to ask. And then Infone also talks about her journey in being a Black woman in the world of finance, and how so often she's like the only woman of color. She's the only dark brown face in lots of spaces. And she talks about how she handles those challenges. She gives you some really good tips on humor. And then we talk about her spirituality. Infone is a Christian, and when she was working through breast cancer, she really learned to deepen her faith and her faith practices. She talks about the difference between reading and studying. And for her, she studies scripture because she says when you study it, then it comes, it's like it serves you even when you're in crisis moments. It's available for you, which is reading it is just goes in and through, and it's just one of the many things you're doing in a day. And then, you know, we also talk about the need for us, everyone, but particularly for Black women who are striving, for entrepreneurs who are really working hard to be successful, those of us who are trying to break generational poverty or debt, it's very easy and accepted in our society to work past your limits, to think of yourself as not having legitimate limits, and to extract from yourself, just mirroring the capitalist extraction culture that we live in. And something like breast cancer, something like a chronic illness, gives you the opportunity to re-examine those values and instead to practice love, to practice slowing down, to practice appreciating something simple like digging in your father's garden, or, you know, eating a fresh vegetable, or learning a whole new culture via movies, which Infone has done in terms of Chinese cinema. So this is a really interesting episode in that it has some really practical tips for you regarding taxes, but it has also a lot of spiritual and earthy guidance in terms of how to live this life. Don't get caught up in the matrix. You may participate in it to some extent, but when you let the matrix's values determine your worth and set your boundaries for you, then you are on a crash course towards chronic illness, towards some kind of health crisis, because we know these systems are not good for our bodies. In fact, you know, Black bodies were used and consumed to build industrialization capitalism in America. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on M-Phone and let her talk to you so you can hear her beautiful laugh. And if you love this episode, please give us a review. Go ahead and give us some stars on Apple. Go ahead and post about it on social media. Let us know. Let other people know so that these great interviews, these great leaders who are rooted in a higher consciousness can spread their knowledge, their wisdom, their vibration throughout the world. That's what you can do. And that's all free. And if you want to be a part of our Mother Tree community, just go to our website, dramandakemp.com, and you'll see a link there to join us. All right. See you on the other side. Hey, everybody. I'm here with M-Phone Etukadin, and we're going to be talking about what is good for this amazing young entrepreneur, tax attorney. So first of all, M-Phone, tell me if I'm pronouncing your last name correctly.
Do you want the Americanized version or
no? Give me the stone cold Nigerian version.
Okay. So I always like to say it in two parts. I like to like staccato it for people so that they can grasp it. But the way you would normally say it is Etukadin. Sounds really fast. You know how like French people, like, you know, they have a word, it has like 10 letters, but they only pronounce like three. So that's kind of how it sounds like. So, but
Etukadin.
Yeah, Etukadin. Yeah, you see, your ear is good. Your ear is amazing. Your ear is gorgeous.
Well, I just had to get the attitude. Etukadin.
With the wave of the hand.
Yes, if you can't see me, I'm waving my left hand, wiggling my head, you know. Okay. All right. So what's good today?
Look, everything. I mean, Houston, even though it's like 103, everybody's absolutely just melting. But I'm over here like, man, the sun is amazing. The humidity is great for my skin, which is great because, you know, sometimes I don't want to put like oil on my face when I need to, but the humidity is so good. It's like the humidity. I mean, I just joined a new team. So, you know, my colleagues, I like the work that I do. Have some pro bono coming up. So that's good too. Tax, of course, tax pro bono case coming up. So that's good. You know, on the clouds in the sky, I just talked to my mom, my dad. So they're in DC visiting my, baby niece. There's so many of them. So it's like everything. What isn't good? I mean, my clicky pen, my favorite clicky pen, everything.
Okay. This is going to seem so superficial, but I actually agree with you. When you have a writing implement that you enjoy, that physically feels pleasurable, it's a thing, right?
It is. And for those that don't have one, they're missing out so bad. You just have to get on our train.
Yes. Because you know what? The keyboard is a problem. It does some things really well. But
look, I brought to this meeting. I was like, you know what? I'm fun. She's interviewing you. But I was like, hey, I grew up in this era.
So for those of you who can't see, M-Phone is holding a beautiful pen and she also held up a spiral notebook. IRL, in real life notebook.
Yes. You know, all those like, okay, you just said IRL and it took me about half a second to figure out what you said. And
I'm just trying to be hip. I'm just trying to be hip.
I'm not there. It's the worst is when you get a message with BRB, but OM on my way. And I'm just like, what do all these letters mean? They don't spell out a word. Like, I didn't grow up in the era where, you know, you talk like that. So it's very new to me. So I'm still adjusting, but you're steps ahead, apparently.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's just pretend I am. So,
By the way, you do not look like you're somebody from my era. I mean, I know we're both Black women and we're aging gracefully.
Yes.
But no, I would not have known from looking at you that you grew up in the analog era.
I did. I remember the Macintosh computers with the big, you know, tube in the back that we used to have in school. Yeah, I remember the floppy disk.
Oh my gosh. What the heck?
Remember Oregon Trail?
Okay. So Ms. Etukaren, tell us a little bit about you. I mentioned that you already said that you joined the team, tax attorney, of course. And I just love to hear like how you got to Houston. Like, are you a Houston native?
I'm not. I actually grew up in Arizona, in Phoenix in particular, which is notable because northern part of Arizona has four seasons. They think it's crazy when it gets down to, when it gets up to 95, they're like, this is, I can't do this. And we're in Phoenix. We're like, you guys are such babies. So I have to specifically say Phoenix because not all of Arizona is hot. So I grew up in Phoenix. And then, you know, after school, after I graduated from college, I worked in San Francisco, at Pacific Gas and Electric. It's a utility company. And then I was like, do I get an MBA? Do I go to law school? Said I had to go to law school, went all the way to Florida because I swore I would never go to school any place that was cold. And then, much to my chagrin, but it's a good thing, I wound up going to get my LLM in taxation from Northwestern during the year of the polar vortex, which, as you know, was probably not the best decision for somebody who loves being hot, right? And so I was there and I was like, I can't stand this place. It's just good during the summertime, the 3 weeks of summer that they have. And people there were like, we swear it's not normally this cold. I'm like, you're lying to me. You are lying to me. So I shot out of Chicago.
I did too. I love that. It was like escape from Chicago, right?
I did. I mean, I lived downtown. It was great. Law school is downtown. It's amazing. But the cold was just, I wasn't built for the cold. I was built for the sun. So I went on my way back to Houston, and I had taken my Texas bar when I graduated from law school. I mean, I had the option to stay in Florida, go back to Arizona, but I was like, I didn't want to go back to Arizona, and I didn't want to stay in Florida because I didn't like it at the time. And I just did the statistical analysis, and Texas came up on top in terms of, you know, housing prices, you know, pay, you know, different factors that I put in. I was a finance major, so I was like, oh, let's build a model for that. So I did.
Okay, you're probably my first guest to say, well, let's build a model for that. And so you did. I love it that I'm finally here with the left brain analytical, you know, thriver and shiner who's got a great sense of humor and this incredible smile. So you decided to move to Texas based on your model.
That's it. I had no family in Texas, no friends. I didn't know a single soul.
Well, you're so obviously you're willing to be the first. You're willing to be a pioneer. And in your field, I can't imagine there are. So tell me what it's so obviously you've got this courage, this capacity to do things new. Mm-hmm. But tell me, what is it like being a Nigerian American, you know, Black woman, tax attorney, mm-hmm. moving to Texas of all places. And I'll tell you right now, I'm afraid of Texas. You know what I'm afraid of? Because they have that, they seem to just kill people with this death penalty. I don't know. Maybe it's incorrect, but I have this impression that they like to put people on death row and just like execute them. Okay. That sounds so brutal, but it is my heartfelt.
Reality may sound brutal, but if that's reality, that's reality. I mean, there's a healthy, I always say there's a healthy fear to have for states that, you know, you can do open carry.
Right. That's another, I've never been in a state where you can do open carry. I mean, I've been in Texas, but I don't know. That's another thing.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I've always been in a field. I mean, I came from a finance background, you know, I worked in accounting. So I've always been in a field where people don't look like me. Even in San Francisco, majority of the people on my team were predominantly either Cantonese, Filipino, or actually the most of Cantonese. Yeah, they're Asian or they're Chinese or Filipino. I spoke either Cantonese or they're Filipino. So people don't normally look like me. So you almost feel like that, you know, when somebody like, you almost feel like a red thumb in the midst of like all the thumbs that are the same color, and yours that you're like throbbing, you know, you're just like, everyone's gonna look at you, even if they're not next to you, right? So I just, my dad always told me, he said, there are two things that people cannot take away from you. They can't take away your reputation and they can't take away your education. So as much as possible, no matter where I go, because I've also worked in Nigeria. I went from Texas, went to Nigeria, worked for the government, came back, you know, to Arizona, then came back to Texas. So I'm always like hopping around. But in all that I do, I try and make sure that my reputation, you know, precedes me in a good way. That might just mean that you have to start thinking differently than everybody else around you. Like I had built up a reputation at a previous job where they're like, it was such a good, I didn't know it at the time, but they're like, you're so smart. And I'm like, I didn't think I was, but they got that perception because I asked questions. Now, why did I ask questions? I asked questions because I was really young. I didn't come from an accounting background. I came from a finance background, for crying out loud. Nobody wants to look at those T accounts and do debits and credits. Give me an Excel sheet and I'm happy, right? Don't give me T accounts with debits and credits and all that journal entry stuff. So I'm like, okay, how do I bring myself up to speed in a way that I don't embarrass myself? I said, okay, you ask questions. And I would ask very strategic questions that would require them to think, because if they thought and they gave me the answer, then I had the answer and I can build up on that. And so, and it's like, you're really, really smart. And so I ended up getting this big account to manage. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know what to do with this. I don't know. But you learn to think differently because you don't look like them. And the expectation is obviously not the same. So yes, we might all have the same assignment, but like my dad, you know, as my parents raised us, being brown in this country, you can't do what your counterparts are doing. If they're, you know, doing something 50%, you better do it 100%. In fact, you can do it 110%, even better. So I kind of came with that mindset. So as I shift into different aspects of my career, even though I might look like a red throbbing thumb, right? Because of my mindset, and how I approach it, outside of the box, you know, this is kind of like a seamless integration. You always kind of get pushback. There's always a little bit of pushback, a little bit of like, you know, those underhanded digs of, are you capable? Only they don't say, are you capable? They just ask you a question and you're just like, did you really ask me that question? Or they'll make a comment that is obviously, you're like, well, duh. And so I sometimes find a way to get back at them for it. I'm like, why would you think anything other than that, you know, or something like that? So maybe not the most professional thing to do, but in a professional environment, you can't tell them, hey, buddy, you're being an a-hole right now. You know, gotta do it in a nice way.
Yeah. So yeah,
that's a long answer. Sorry.
I love that answer. Hey, today's episode is sponsored by DrAmandaKemp.com, my business. And I want to invite you to download a free gift. I've put together something called the 5 signs it's time to slow down your social justice or your racial justice. And basically, it's a little sheet so that you can check and see, do I need to slow down what I'm doing and what you can do instead? So go ahead over to DrAmandaKemp.com, to my website, and you will see an option to download that cheat sheet for 5 signs it's time to slow down your racial justice or your social justice. Thanks for listening. And I love that. It's a good end. Like, why would you even ask me that? I do want everybody who can't see you to know that you have an incredible smile.
Oh,
and
thank you.
You know, so even though you are, quote, the red thumb in this sea of other thumbs that look alike, even though you stand out and there's a weight to that, You know, yeah. there's a pressure to that, that you are obviously managing to refuel your joy.
Yes, absolutely. And
so tell us about that. What gives you joy?
Should I give you the honest answer?
Oh, give it to me.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Food, eating food, cooking food used to give me joy until I realized the amount of dishes that I had to wash by myself. And so I was like, maybe I'll just eat. So I love eating. I love reading my Bible. I love reading my Bible because it's like a little, it's like, even if you read the same passage, you know, the Holy Spirit just works and it just reveals things to you. So it's like my little like fun time. And I'm like a little nerd. I have my markers and my highlighters. I'm really excited. So I love reading my Bible. I love, my husband makes me laugh a lot. So interacting with him gives me great joy. My nieces and nephews, picking my dad's vegetables in his garden. Cause my dad has this thing where he's a consummate farmer. He plants, but he finds it so hard to like pick his own vegetables. It's kind of like the farmer who has animals, but won't kill them. Right. And so my dad is like, oh, I can't do it. I'm like, well, I will happily pick this basil for you, dad. So, you know, picking his vegetables, whether it's basil, spaghetti squash, spinach, sometimes strawberries, cucumbers. He grows a whole number of things. Rosemary, herb that he grows.
He grows all this in Phoenix?
He sure does. My dad is a horticulturalist. He has the greenest thumb of every. He has lemons. He has six citrus plants. He grows tomatillo. He grows okra. He grows so many different things. He grows cassava. I know, which is yuca for those, you know, he's so many different things. So yeah, like those little things give me joy. Like a good Asian movie, a good Chinese drama. It's those, you know.
Give me an example of a good Asian movie or Chinese drama. So I know.
Okay. So there's one called I think it's The Legend of Yingxi Palace, and it's this period drama. It's like 70 episodes of 45 minutes a piece. So it's a commitment. It took me a long time to watch. And I got into it when I was going through cancer treatment last year because I couldn't do anything. I couldn't exercise. You know, I couldn't do anything after the surgery. And my brothers were like, you got to watch movies. And I was like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to watch movies. Lazy people watch movies. They're like, it's fine. You can't do anything. You need to learn how to relax and watch movies. Because I don't watch movies. And so I was like, fine. And since I wanted to learn Chinese, I was like, well, I'm just going to watch these Chinese dramas. Amanda, it was probably the best and worst decision that I made during recovery. Because all my mom would hear is, ni hao. And she would just smile. She's like, yes, you're enjoying yourself. And me, I'm like falling into this rabbit hole of enjoyment, knowing I should get myself out of it, but I can't do it because they're so good. So it's at this period piece about this lady. She went from a palace maid to be the equivalent of an empress, only she was entitled an empress. And it just kind of recounts her story, you know, different plots through it, the love plots and things like that. It's different from American cinema. I mean, they're very big on culture and respect, and you know, you just get to see different aspects of another culture through their movies. And so I really appreciated that about it. I still want to learn Chinese.
Yes. Because,
you know, why not? It's a good language to know. Language of commerce and the growing language of commerce in a lot of places.
Yes.
So outside of China. So yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Those are things that give me joy.
Wow. I love
little
that.
Little did you know, Amanda.
Little, I'm so happy to be learning more about you. And, you know, but the through line is the markers, the highlighters, the pens. Like, you bring that analytical brain. I'm going to pick this Bible apart.
I'm telling you. And I do.
I see. And, you know, when we're in the right lane,
right,
it's like regenerative.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So if the pen and the markers, and you use it with the Bible or use it with spreadsheets, right, you're using your gifts wherever you right. are, it seems like. And that's like right. feeding you.
Yeah, I am. My gift of highlighting.
And I'm not going to step over. You mentioned recovering from cancer.
Yes.
And I want to say beautiful and wonderful. And I'm so glad you're here to let us know that you did make that recovery.
I did.
And as a very, you know, as a, I was going to say very successful, probably by many standards in many ways. What do you feel if you got a gift from the cancer experience, what would you say that gift was?
I would say that gift was to slow down because before then I was just like, oh, it's going to be, I was just so focused on achieving and success. And it was anything that wasn't related to what I thought to be success at the time, I didn't do it. And I didn't like distractions or what I considered to be distractions. So, you know, I love Marvel comics, but I can't go and watch those movies. They're distracting. And I thought I was being focused, right? But what I was doing was missing out on all these other, what some might consider superfluous things of life, but they really add color and really add flavor to life. And so it took the doctor cutting a lump out of my boob and, you know, the time for radiation for me to slow down, because when that's slowing down, I'm like, oh, there's so much color to the world other than law and tax and being the best in your field and getting all these awards and recognitions. And so I learned to slow down. And so, I mean, God saw me through the whole thing and it was really quick. And the process was, I mean, it was so amazing because, you know, during the process, my prayer was that, you know, the tumor would shrink, and it did. It shrunk from the time I was diagnosed to the time I got surgery. And so I learned to slow down. And when you slow down, what you begin to see is you begin to see the blessing that God has put in your life. You cannot see it when you're going in the fast lane. You begin to see the people. You begin to see the smiles. You begin to see how your body is operating. You begin to appreciate even the operation of your body. You begin to see all these little things. You begin to appreciate the fact that, you know, you live in a city, even though the pipe might have brown water, but you live in a city that has running water, right? You begin to see all these blessings that God has placed in your life, all because you chose to go in the slow lane. Because the fact of the matter is, whether you're in the fast lane or in the slow lane, the person, you're all going to get to the same destination. Since that the person in the slow lane might, you know, they might avoid that speed hump that you didn't see coming because you're going too fast. You go too fast, guess what? You didn't see that, you know, that dip or whatever coming, and guess what? You blow your tire out. And eventually that person in the slow lane might pass you because you just didn't take the time to just be a little bit slower. That was the gift.
Wow. And that's thank you.
Yeah.
I feel like that has really been the message I've been getting, Imphone.
Wow.
Really? Yes. Yes. Slow down. And like you said, partly it's because of all the things that you miss going so fast, trying to get somewhere.
Yes.
And then also you said, we're all getting to the same destination.
Right.
You know, we're, and to me, truthfully, cause I'm in my mid to late fifties now, we're all getting to the destination of death.
That's right.
We're all going to, you know, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
So whether you take it fast or you slow, one of the things I realized for me, and I'll ask you about this too, one of the reasons that made me fast was fear.
Mm.
I was afraid of, partly afraid of missing out, but afraid of losing somehow, afraid of difficult feelings, the past catching up with me. Afraid of not having enough, you know,
yes.
Having grown up with out enough and some experiences regarding money. So so fear is what was keeping me in fast, and slowing down meant I needed to face some fear, and it was scary. Wow. Yeah. It was uncomfortable in my body to slow down.
That's profound. I'm actually writing down what you said.
I noticed.
Can't help it. It's so good.
Yes, it is good. But I wonder for how many of us, we're going so fast, you know, out of habit or default.
But don't you think that's the society, what the society expects? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, how do you tell people to do what people don't expect when what people expect seems to be getting everybody the result right. that they expect?
Right. Right.
So difficult. Right.
Well, in your case, I mean, you know, we get results we don't want too when we when we're fast, right? Right. So our bodies give us messages,
right.
and you're not the only one. Clearly,
that's
you know, right. I mean, you know, I could tell my own body story. So many of us who've been fast, and maybe particularly, you know, Black women who've been very successful or leaders or, you know, the ones who stand out and, you know what I mean? We take mm-hmm. certain kinds of energetic, resistance. We have to meet it. Maybe we even take energetic hits being very visible.
Right.
So when we are, when we're fast, we're not probably even letting ourselves recover from those hits or, you know what I mean? And
that's a good point.
Like when you were going fast, were you reading your Bible?
I was reading it, but I wasn't studying it.
Mm.
I think there's a difference. When you read to study, you read for comprehension. Like anybody can, I mean, I'll be honest. How many times have I read the back of a cereal box? Can I tell you anything that it said? Absolutely not. Because I'm reading it again the next time I go to the store and buy the same box of cereal, right? But when you study something, you almost read it so that it can infuse itself in you. And once something infuses itself in you, it's like adding salt to food. Once you salt food, it's very hard to make that food to unsalt that food because salt is pervasive. So you read it so that it can be like salt to you. And it's kind of hard to get that out. And when that happens, you know, we know that the Bible says the word of God is living and breathing, right? Able to pierce through bone and marrow. And so when that happens and that word is in you, it's infused in you, the same thing that says, you know, death and life and the power of the tongue and those who love it will eat its fruits. Guess what's coming when you're in a hardship situation? Guess what's coming? You're speaking life into that situation, right? Because you've allowed that word to just sit in you. And so now it's part of your sinews. It's part of the fibers of your muscle. And so it almost becomes like an automatic reflex. That's what happens when you study. So I started studying. I started studying differently, right? I started studying so that I can be one with the word, as opposed to just, you know, reading just to know. So,
Wow.
I love that curious look on your face. You would be the best student, like the absolute best student.
I am.
Oh my goodness.
I love the role of student.
Oh my God.
It's a role we play in life, right? I love that role. But I also love the role of teacher.
Yeah, you're a great teacher.
Yeah, it goes, they're the flip. It's a flip side of the coin.
But yeah. I'm just speaking selfishly. If I was a professor and I saw you in my class and I saw your attentiveness, I would just be like, yes, I'm going to look at you the entire class. I'm going to speak directly to you. Pop my ego.
Yes, yes. And you would never have seen me in your finance classes. You would never have seen me in those classes.
You know what's funny, Amanda? I do have a creative side.
Tell me about it.
I love creating recipes. I have a body care line. It's called Uyai Body Care, UBC. Uyai means beautiful in my language. So I have a body care line. And we're working on the website and stuff. I do have people that buy from me. I started during the pandemic. And so I have a body care line. It's all natural, all vegan. And it's specifically targeted for brown skin. Because what I found was in the market, you go out, even the J&J stuff or the big box things that are made for brown skin, you're like, I only want a lotion one time a day. And I want to be able to do everything else everybody else does. And then I don't look like somebody threw flour on me, right? You want your skin to be moisturized, all that good stuff. So I did hours of research, hundreds of hours of research, reading PhD papers. Out of like the University of Guangzhou and different places. And I started researching the butters and oils that were good for pigmented skin in particular. And after 2 years and many formulations, like, you know, stress testing and all this, all the microbial testing, all that stuff, I came out with this formula. And so it has 8 different butters, 7 different oils. And it only comes from the places where brown skin is, Brazil, India, and Africa. because obviously the mentality was, I'm going to go there because they're probably going to know how they take care of their skin that looks similar to mine. And so that's my creative side. I create recipes. From scratch. So if you tell me, hey, I'm fine, I want to eat, you know, I'm feeling like a vegan meal today. My mind does this thing where it populates on its own a list of ingredients and seasonings. And so it's kind of like a cheat system. My mom is like, that's a gift. I was like, no, mommy, anybody can do that. She's like, no, that's not normal. Your mind doesn't automatically populate ingredients to use in a food that you've never cooked before. And I was like, oh, maybe she's right. I'm naturally creative.
Food is creative. You brought your spreadsheet mind to your recipe making and in our show notes, we will definitely link to your products. I would love to find out more about your products.
So
definitely send us that. One of the things I've been telling people in phone though is that you're a tax attorney and that one of your commitments is that regular everyday people who don't have tons of money, how we can, strategize or approach our lives so that we pay our fair share, but that we're not, you know, paying more than Donald Trump, which, apparently it's not hard to do because he pays so little, but
right.
So I don't know if you have any, general tips for us about things to think about, mm-hmm. how we organize our lives so that we can, you know, do with our money what we really feel called to do. So I guess first for those, I have a lot of people in my community, I think, who are like, freelancers who have a side hustle or who have their own business, you know, very small mm-hmm. business. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who, you know, are retired. So just anything you want to say along those lines to either of those groups.
Yeah. So it's very important as particularly as a new entrepreneur or a solopreneur, some people call it, you have your own business. It's very important that you think and understand primarily first how you want to live your life, what kind of lifestyle you want, how you want your everyday life to go. It could be the food that you eat. I mean, everything. And why do I say that? I say that because when you look at how this is how the big boys and big girls of the world are able to pay sometimes next to nothing, right? It's because they have that hat first. So like, say for example, you're like, okay, say for example, let me give you a client. Okay. Hairdresser, right? Hairdresser shut down her shop during the pandemic. She had to shut down her shop. Fine. now she's still, she shoots videos. She shoots these hair videos, right? Teaches people how to braid, different things, but she loves to travel. Loves to travel. Of course, during the pandemic, that was impossible. So now pandemic is over. She's like, okay, I'm going to go to Ghana, you know, this, that, and the other. And she's like, I'm just going to go to Ghana, you know, just to see Ghana. She had never been there. And I was like, you're going to Shea Butter Capital of Africa, one of the Shea Butter Capitals of Africa. Why don't you, on your trip to Ghana, ensure that you speak to either shea producers or you speak to maybe really popular hair owners or hair shop owners, maybe it might be in Accra or wherever you're going, on what they use, right, to, you know, for their clients' hair, to, you know, to lengthen their hair, to maintain the integrity of their hair. Because what was now just a fun personal trip that wasn't right, you can't write it off, you now turn that into a business expense because you legitimately said, how do I want my life to live? Love to travel. And how does my business fit into that life that I want to live? And so that's how people have to think about it. And once you think about it that way, I guarantee you, I promise there will be so many things that you do in your personal life that you can easily infuse your business in there. And it's all legal. The IRS allows you to do that because there are deductions, legitimate business deductions for these things. People are like, oh, it's too good to be true. And I'm like, well, you keep thinking that. Okay. And you keep go ahead and paying the taxes that you don't need to pay. You go ahead and you keep thinking it's too good to be true. Because I guarantee you, top 1% is like, look, is there any more? Can we get some more? So yeah, that's one thing I would tell people. Shall I tell another?
I love that example. Thank you so much. Think about where do you really like, what's important to you, and then how can that be in service to your business?
Right.
You know, so how is travel in service to your business? And in my case, I was thinking about, we have this beautiful, you know, 3/4 acre property and with a swimming pool, which we swam in this morning. I'm very grateful for what we have. Absolutely. 100%. I live in a place where I could afford to have this as part of my daily life. And I just, this morning I thought, you know, I bet you M-Phone would say, you know, if I invited people here for, you know, retreats on a regular basis, artists in residence, if there's some way that, you know, there's more of the land, not just my home office, but there's more of the way that the land and, you know, the pool and the tent I have outside can be also understood to be a part of my business.
Right. You can, it may not, it can be used, the expenses can be used as a business expense, not necessarily that it would be a part of your business, but it could be used, like you said, as a business expense. You were reading my cliff notes, Amanda. Why were you reading my cliff notes?
Well, listen to me. I found out about you from Valerie Bowden, who was another guest on our podcast. And before we started the recording, she said, I just got my tax info from info on it. Oh my God, I'm so grateful. She saved me so much money. I was like, wow, that's something lovely to hear around tax time, you know, because so many of us who have our own businesses, you know, we're stressed, you know, it can be very fearful.
Right. And you know what's funny, Amanda? I found that women tend to pay more in taxes than men do because women tend to be a little bit safer. Mm-hmm. They tend to not want to ruffle, right? But men are, they're asking you like, look, I don't like this. What can I do about it? But the women may not even ask the question because it might be, it might sound like a cantankerous question. Maybe I don't want to ruffle the feathers of the IRS or whatever. So they wouldn't even ask the question. So men wind up paying more than they actually need to pay, which is something I found in practice is very interesting.
So if people want to take this approach that you're saying, I'm guessing that you do consultations still, although now you're part of some team, so maybe you'll even
I still do consultations.
I still do consultations. Okay.
Yeah.
So people could consult with you.
Yes.
Or if they have someone who they like already, would there be certain questions that you would have them ask their, you know, their preferred tax person?
Yes. So, excuse me. So I always want clients to ask their preferred tax person, and I'm going to give them 3 questions. Number one, I want them to ask the preferred tax person, and this is the person that does your return for you. Can you walk me through how my business ties into my 1040, how my business ties into my personal return? Your tax person should be able to walk you through that. Why is that important? Because if they can walk you through that, you can now see, number one, it's kind of like a check. You can see what they're doing, how they did it. It was that kind of right. But like, if they say, "Oh, it has no relationship," and you know they're blowing hot smoke up your, you know what? That, because it does. It does have a relationship, especially if you're a solo business owner. You more than likely will file a Schedule C, and all that stuff flows onto your 1040 anyway. And or if you have an S corp, you're going to file 1120S. You get a K-1, flows onto your 1040. So ask your tax person that. How does your business tie into your personal? And the second thing you ask your tax person are there any personal expenses that I can also use for my business? Your tax person should know what you're spending money on, what you're utilizing, what you're utilizing your money on. They should know that. If they don't, it's probably because, you know, one of a few things, they haven't asked you enough questions or you haven't given them enough information, period, point blank. That's it. So they should know what you're utilizing your money on by doing that, they'll have a general idea of what you're doing in your personal life as well. So it's not just about giving them a whole bunch of documentation and then they file and then that's it. You have to build a relationship. So that's the second question I would ask them. And then the third question you would ask them is maybe not a question that most tax people, that I would expect most tax people to undertake to even answer. But you just ask them, hey, is there anything new that I can take advantage of in my business? Why is this question relevant? It's relevant because the tax code is rapidly changing ever since former President Donald Trump was in power. I mean, you know, changes like every 2 years. They're like, oh, we're going to take this out. We're going to bring that in. And, you know, regulations are still being created for the rules that were created back in 2018. So things are always going to be changing. So in this era of rapidly changing tax rules, always ask them, is there anything new that I can take advantage of in my business? That will force them to do research, which, depending on if you're with, you know, a older or younger tax professional, I'm a lawyer, so we're always in the rules and, you know, sorting through paperwork and things like that. But let's be honest, nobody wants to go and do research when they don't have to. But if you ask them, you're going to force them to do research. And honestly, all of that for them, all of those questions that you ask them, they're not going to make a profit off of those questions and answering it. In fact, their time, the time that they spend answering those questions for you will probably not be worth what you're paying them. But what it will do is you'll establish that relationship. So in the second and third year that you work with them again, you know, it'll be a little bit easier. Like, hey, Mr. Such and Such, Mrs. Such and Such, Miss Such and Such, have you thought about this? And so you kind of have this very symbiotic relationship, because if you ask them questions and they go and do the research, they can use that information, use on their other clients. You know, that's the way I see it. But in the first year, it's not what I'm telling you to do or ask these questions. It's not profitable for your tax person.
That is what I've noticed. I've noticed how it seems like when I've gone with firms to do my taxes, mm-hmm. and I do because I'm one of those women who don't want any problems whatsoever with the IRS. Yes. And also I don't like finance. I don't like spreadsheets. So it makes sense for me to be having someone, you know, do my taxes and my accounting. Mm-hmm. But what really bothered me was the feeling like they wanted to do the absolute minimum. And everything I asked about, well, what about this? Can we be creative with this? It was like, there was no research. It just seemed like, the business model was minimal time spent with me. So that, like you said, so that means that they're using their time, I guess, with new clients, or it's mm-hmm. like keeping it. And that is, that just felt really wrong to me, or not fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I can see how you would think that. But then also when you look at it from their perspective, the busiest time for tax professionals in the country is right before April mm-hmm. or in October when extensions are due for most businesses, but mostly in April. Everybody's concerned about, you know, that. And nobody wants to get bogged down with those handful of clients that are, you know, really diligent, because at the same time, they don't want to be working until 3 o'clock every single day. I mean, easily you can put in 70 hours a week for a month straight during tax season.
Right.
Easy right. 70, like without even trying.
Wow.
And what happened? It's probably what happened with me. As you know, I was really sick my body broke down.
Yeah.
That's the flip side. So they have to weigh that. They're like, yes. Look, man, I have kids. I got to make dinner when I go home. Yep. And then after I make dinner, I have to get back online and work. Yep. And I've got to put my kids to bed, read for them for an hour, do their homework with them, and then give them a bath, and then get back online. By the time they're offline, it's 3 o'clock.
Yep.
And then you're back at it. So there's so many things to weigh.
Of course. So tell me, so as someone, you know, as a woman, and you mentioned that you're married, you've mentioned your husband. So mm-hmm. tell me, like, how do you, and you've had your health experience,
yeah.
you learned to slow down. So have you restructured your life to help you to slow down, or how have you slowed down?
I have. If I feel like not doing something, I'm like, you know what? I feel like I need to rest today. I listen to myself and I rest. If my body's telling me, like, look, girl, you need to sit down. You just need to take a nap. I say, you know what, body? You're right. Let me take a nap. And that, who knows, that nap that you took for what was supposed to be a 30-minute nap turned into a 3-hour nap. it saved you, it replenished your energy for the next, you know, 1 to 2 weeks. And so I've learned to just like heed the call of my body as opposed to, no, I can plow through it. I can do it. And nobody is Superman. I mean, except for Superman, but even then he's a fictional character.
Yeah.
So I haven't restructured it in that sense, but I've just learned to listen to my body more.
Listen to your body.
I try and go to sleep at a certain time, you know, and things like that. I try and be up. I try and things that feed my spirit. Excuse me. I try and make a habit of being in that and listening to that. So, because if it feeds the spirit, you know, I've noticed that for me, if it feeds my spirit, my body tends to, you know, be a little bit more skippity, skip, skip, skip.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. So we're going to take a little break here for our word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back. Perfect. So we're back with our special guest, Imphone Etukeren. And Imphone, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you and to see
you. Thank you.
And I wonder if there's anything you want to leave our listeners with. Because we talked about so many things, but is there one thing you want to leave the listeners with?
Yeah, I do. There's one thing, and it's the one thing that I learned when, I'm going to say I realized it during treatment, when I was going through a cancer treatment. So in the Bible, it says that when Mary got pregnant, Mary was like, how is this going to happen? I'm a virgin. I never slept with anybody. How am I going to have a baby? An angel said, with God, nothing is impossible. And I hung on to that scripture as I was going through treatment, as the cancer was shrinking, at a point where I was unemployed, work was going bad, all things happened to be imploding, you know, no insurance, all this other stuff, like your car is doing all sorts of crazy things. And so I've just kind of hung on to that scripture ever since then. And I was like, yes, with God, nothing is impossible. And it is, God has proven himself time and time again. So yes, that would be what I would leave people.
Thank you. Nothing is impossible.
Yes.
With God.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Great. Yes, great. Ma'am. And if people want to follow you on phone, if they want to follow you in terms of your skin products or professionally, you know, what you do to help people like me who want help on our strategizing about our lives and taxes, how do they get more in touch with you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn with my first and last name, or you can find me also on so many places on LinkedIn. First and last name, or Clarity Tax Law, also on LinkedIn. Same name on Instagram, Clarity Tax Law as well. We also have a website. If you want to just be snoopy, just go and snoop around the website, see what's going on, see how the menus were set up. But best way to contact me are via Instagram, LinkedIn.
Okay, great. Yeah. Clarity Tax Law. Tax.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, or Imphone Etukeren. And that is spelled Etukeren.
Yes, you got it. Yes.
Well, let's be honest. I can read.
Check mark for you. Gold star for you.
Yes. Gold star for me. All right. Well, thank you so much, Imphone Etukeren. Keep slowing down. You know, keep doing what you love to do. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much, Amanda. Talk to you soon.
So wasn't that beautiful? One of the things that Imphone really emphasized was the need to slow down. Slow down and connect with your body. Slow down and connect with the people you love. And slow down and connect with the earth, with, you know, plants around you. It's like, let's get out of those fluorescent lights and sitting at a desk and being in concrete environments. Please get out and let the dirt touch you in some kind of way. If you want to know if it's time for you to slow down your social justice or if it's time for you to slow down your life, I recommend you take our checklist. Is it time to slow down your racial justice, your social justice checklist? Come on the website, check it out. it'll give you some food for thought. And if you need permission to slow down, if you need an outside voice, someone who has been in the trenches of racial justice for four decades to advise you, to help you look at yourself in a holistic way, go ahead and sign up. Take this checklist, get it, and sign up for a sacred listening session with me. Once you get the checklist, you'll also see a link for that. So just go to dramandakemp.com. That's dramandakemp.com. And you'll see a link for our free checklist. And on that checklist, you'll see a link for a sacred listening session with me. So thank you again for being with us. And don't forget, leave us some stars. It's free and it helps other people find the leaders that we have with us. Peace.